The Rebel Leadership Podcast, a refreshing take on authentic leadership told through real stories. Let's smash the status quo and change how leaders lead once and for all. Workplace negativity can have a snowball effect. Once it starts, it can grow unwieldy until it gets past your ability to handle it. But how can leaders effectively mitigate that negativity? On today's episode of the Rebel Leadership Podcast, I'm talking to Dr. Benjamin Finlayson, PhD, MFTC at Regis University's Division of Counseling and Family Therapy. He's an expert on LGBTQIA identity, solution-focused therapy, suicide, and medical family therapy. We're joined by account supervisor Sam Mance about countering negativity in the workplace. As leaders, like almost anything else, workplace negativity challenges us to build new skills. Whether it's about showing up as honestly as possible, listening more effectively, actively seeking feedback, or creating space for people to air their grievances and respond effectively. The fact is, negativity should be treated as an opportunity. When we create a space where we challenge each other, we're vulnerable, we listen to and act on disagreement, constructive, albeit, we create a better, more validating workplace environment. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So get ready to immerse yourself in the issues surrounding and solutions to negativity in the workplace. Just don't be a negative Nancy while you listen. Listen, reflect, and embrace your next aha moment. So I'm sure this is the most scientific way to say this, but in your world, describe what is a negative Nancy.
One, we need to open space for the term negative Nancy. I recognize, like, I'm a male identified colleague talking about a term that's probably rooted in some sexism there. We have the chatty Cathys and the negative Nancys and this stereotype that women are chatty, emotional, and anything along those lines, that we have a male talking about this pejorative and really derogatory term. And so when I see it in my field and in the work that I do, I would say it comes in a frustration. In academia, I think there's a structure and a hierarchy that is often seldom challenged and silenced at times when challenging happens, because we have a way of doing things, and you are disrupting the system that is in place. As a systems-based therapist, we talk a lot about homeostasis, like people don't like change. As much as we talk about change and the need for it, as soon as we invite change into the space, oh, we get uncomfortable because you're messing with my identity and my rhythm. And that feels, from a biological component, like it feels bad. And so we're going to do what we need to do to silence that, whether it's externally or internally. And so that's how I see it. I look at it as systems. Allison, I see people in that way, ooh, in that resistance.
You opened quite quite the box. I love it. Let's dig in. So, Sam, what is your take on what you interpret as negative Nancy, and what actually brought this topic on in the first place?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like negative Nancy to me, like, it's deep rooted, and it's all these things of looking at a situation, whether it's change, fear, jealousy, all of those emotions, and just always looking at the negative side of it. It's so easy. Like, there's a thing called negativity bias, which we can probably dig into later, but where it's just easy to gravitate towards negativity and be a negative person. And once it starts, it just builds, 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 and builds. And so why I brought this podcast idea to you was I was listening to one of our podcasts, The Power of Belief, and it was so positive and it was such a good podcast, but I knew the negative side of it because you had told us. Mm-hmm. I was like, there should be like a whole podcast about the negative side of this, because it is positive and there is all this power and all the support, but there's a whole flip side to that coin that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. And I think what we're feeling in the tension of a rapidly growing business, multi-generational, multi-diverse background sets, all different walks of life, skill set, experience, is how do you, as a female, how do you present fact without judgment and without tone and without the perception that you are just bringing the negative to be negative and being pegged in that light, when in reality, you are a speaker of truth and you have the courage that others don't have.
Mm-hmm. And I just hear that statement alone, and I think that sucks. that we have to hide our authentic selves because we've been told we're too reactive, too emotional. And you say we're speakers of truth, and now you're going to police how I say that. We see this discord in civility as well. And yet I could be, as a male, I can be loud and aggressive. And that's just what men do in business. They're loud and they're messy. But when you do it, we should feel free to bring truth and not have to hide the fact that we have emotions associated with that truth. Because I imagine, Sam, perhaps in this experience, you're also invested in the outcome. Mm-hmm. You are invested in why this is important to you. And you shouldn't have to hide the piece of you that needs to bring that forward and say, I'm a human experiencing something, and please listen to me.
Yeah,
absolutely. I shouldn't have to present this like a robot to you.
And I think, like, in my particular role on the client services team, a lot of that is emotion-based. It's a lot of those soft skills that we talk about all the time of, like, maybe there's not a hard fact of why I'm feeling this way, but I'm feeling this way. I'm getting this reaction, or, you know, I'm getting a vibe check from the team that is not good and we should probably talk about it. And whether that's accurate or not, it's something that we should address because I'm feeling that. And maybe it's valid, maybe it's not, but why not check?
And there comes a point in time in leadership that it becomes really difficult to separate what is negativity that you should pay attention to, what is negativity that is actually gossip and not constructive, what is negativity because someone's crying out for help, what is negativity that really warrants your time and attention. And it becomes really difficult when you're surrounded with it. And it's very, very nuanced to see the difference of that. And we're, you're not trained in sorting through all of that stuff. So then it starts to default to that status quo that we were talking about in the beginning. Like, okay, that person's just going to come at me with the negative all the time. But when in reality, that's the way they approach situations, or they're actually trying to have the courage to talk to you about something. What has been your experience with seeing and spotting the differences between those things, and how leaders or counselors or the trained eye can help someone sort through that in their mind?
It means something to them. And I like to think that people are showing up with their best selves, even if we may disagree with what that looks like. My impulse is to say this serves a purpose. Maybe being negative has like probably kept you safe for a long time. And it's reminded you that you can keep your expectations low, because to have them high is going to lead you to disappointment. It gives you structure and comfort in some aspects. And so when I think that I'm listening to negativity, I try to find the value that it holds for this person. What are they bringing to me? It is really important for you. And then I try to flip it. So I practice this type of therapy and research it quite a bit, called solution-focused therapy, which on its like front sounds very dismissive to an extent of, okay, we're just going to focus on solutions. And that's really not the case. That's problem solving. That's different than solution focused. And in this point, I listen to what is important to you. Why are you complaining about this person? It is important for you to feel heard in this company. And what I'm hearing you say through your complaints about Allison, I'm going to borrow your name.
That's okay.
You don't feel heard. You don't feel appreciated for some reason in this kind. And it's important for you to feel like you get to show up and be unique in the space. And we've not done that for you. And so I think when I am trying to disseminate the role, I try to listen for value. Why is this important? Why is this keeping you safe? What function does it serve for you?
So how can leaders get to that value? Right. What questions do we ask? What's the approach?
Gosh, I think it starts first with demonstrating. I think we are used to leaders asking of us to be vulnerable and empathetic and share us your like struggles. And then we see nothing come of it. We're left feeling a little bit empty and used because we've offered this vulnerability and space, and then nothing happens. To be a leader and to get into that space is to first demonstrate that you too are willing to do that. And maybe that comes in a business meeting, your next group leader, where you say, hey, I'm struggling with this. Is anyone else feeling this way? You know, and you allow yourself to be a demonstration that that vulnerability is rewarded and that policy is affected too. So what would you like to see different?
I love that. There's something
Go ahead, Sam. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say there's something that like reminds me of a technique that a couple of our managers here do, like highs and lows. Mm. And I think it's important in those meetings. I know I do it with my pod members. Like you tell me your highs, you tell me your lows. I'm going to tell you my highs and my lows. Like I'm going through it too. Like it's not just you. Mm-hmm. I'm also having a bad week. Like let's talk it out. And then we can all have a better week next week. That's why there's 5 days in a week.
Mm-hmm. I've seen and felt what you just said about like there's something about your presence in the room that changes when you get down on the level of everybody that's in there and say, right. I'm struggling with the finding the solution of this topic. This is a big, hairy topic that we're talking about. It's stressful from all angles and we don't have the solution yet. And having the courage to say that thing, it's disarming. It instantly calms down the room. Mm-hmm. In a weird way, because we're actually saying we don't know how to solve this thing. So in theory, mm-hmm. it should create more tension. But in reality, the responses you get are kind. Everybody has support of one another. It instantly turns what could have been negative because of the approach to a really positive solutions-oriented team building mm-hmm. conversation.
And I feel like there's a fine line though of as a leader, especially at your level of leading a company, not just people or a project, leading a company, you can be vulnerable and have that negativity, but these people still need to trust you. So you can't be like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like,
exactly. Oh.
So like, where is that line?
It's so true. There's like this, I don't know what the line is.
Well, maybe Benjamin does.
Yeah, maybe Benjamin, you do.
Then I think we go back to transparency and honesty. You do have a role to fill. As a leader, there are some things that may not be negotiable and or may not be changeable at this immediate time, but make the policies transparent. What we need is to hear the words and see them on paper and go, okay, you're right. There are some things you're going to need to do as a leader to ensure the success of this business. Because guess what? Also, yeah, your success means my financial security too in this business and where I want to be. But let us be transparent about how are you making these decisions? When you hear that we are coming with these grievances, with this vulnerability, and it's not met with silence, let us know. Then what steps were taken? What difference is made to you? So that we're not then offering like this grief Olympics that we talk about sometimes of like, well, my struggles are worse than your struggles. And that doesn't make us feel good. We need to see or hear that things are actually changing, that you hear my story and that means something to you.
So what are ways that you found throughout your career to build that trust in order for that two-way street to happen?
I think it starts first with being human. And that starts with tapping into who you are and how you show up to situations. And I will give you a personal example. I think it takes our own like vulnerable moments to realize that we are breakable humans that are just looking for something. Whether that's in the workplace or elsewise. And in getting my doctorate, I was ending an engagement, was living in a new house, was starting a doctoral program with very successful people in a program that's rooted in a lot of success and a lot of high performance in the culture of academia where you just grin and bear it. It's what we do. We all struggle and you get over it. And I was at this time, it was in the very beginning parts of the semester, and I was struggling. I was missing case notes. I was falling behind in my academic work. And truly, Allison, Sam, I did not know how to ask for help. I did not know what to do because I was in a culture in my mind where these are just things people deal with and you get over it. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting with my advisor, Jacqueline Pickens, and so kind. And this is where I think I've learned how to embrace this vulnerability. Is the way that she sat with me. And this is a person who truly held so much of my academic career in her hand to see that I was falling behind and could lead me one way out of the program or lead me through the program and through this grief. And she looked at me and she said, Ben, this isn't you. Like I know you well enough to know that this is not how you operate. And so that's the first lesson is, do you know the people you're with? Do you know your neighbor? Do you know them well enough to know how they show up? And what's different? So that's the first piece. And she said, I know you. I see you. And this is not you. What's happening? And of course, I go, let's talk about it. I'm like really sad. I'm like going through a lot of grief right now and feel a lot of pressure to perform. And I don't know what to do. And I don't know how to ask for help.
Yeah. You felt safe saying that to her.
Yeah. And she looked at me and I'll never forget what she said, because she said, Benjamin, you're entering a field of family therapy. She said that if you can't figure out how your work life is impacting your personal life and how your personal life is impacting your work life, I'm worried about the field you're going into. Oh, crap. Except in a few other choice words. And it struck me so deeply because I've been fed this lie of like almost meritocracy that like when I enter a workplace, my personal life falls off. And when I exit the building, I leave work there. And that's just such a lie.
Such a lie.
If we're being honest. Mm-hmm. And I felt so raw in that moment that this person took the time to know me well enough to look into my soul and say, there's something better for you, but we have to be willing to ask for it. How can I help you feel comfortable and safe enough to ask for that? And I think that came through, she knew me. And so as leaders, the things that I have found, and when I'm working with clients, before we even get into the problem of what brought you to therapy, Allison, Sam, I want to know who you are. What's your story? What's important to you? Because we are such storied humans and we forget about that in the workplace. And we were just talking about that in a division meeting. We forget humans are showing up to this business, and we're sad humans. We're happy humans. We're frustrated and vulnerable humans. But we've been told to turn that off, and we expect our leaders to dismiss whatever we bring.
So why do you think it is that certain leaders ascend to this title and they forget who they were, what struggles they had, how it feels to be an employee with a boss? Why does that happen in your experience?
We find our new normal. I think we find our new homeostasis, and we find our own success and accomplishment sometimes and forget that there also is a story that brought us there. We take on new roles. The work of a leader is different than the work of those that work with us and around us. We forget what that work looks like, what that work entails to be that person. So I don't think it's on purpose. I don't think it's malicious. I don't think we ascend to these leadership roles and then become this manipulative. I don't think that's the case at all. I think we just change and forget how that change happened. Because we have new expectations too. Your role as a leader now looks different. Not only are you thinking about your job, but your job security also probably means the job security of everyone that works in that company too. And that also is scary and vulnerable. And probably it's hard not to lead with anxiety when our workforce comes to us and says, we need change. And you think, this is a reflection on me. I have done bad. And that defense steps forward.
Yeah.
How do you separate the personal reaction to the negativity coming at you?
It's hard. Of course, we love a good I statement. I think one, it's setting up the conversation well for success. Let's start there. Let's also train ourselves to know the conversation's going to come with emotions, because we are emotional people. We're frustrated and we're sad. And then I think as a leader, it also takes active work to engage in some of those mindful practices, to work on listening, not to respond, but to understand. And Allison, there's such a difference there. And this is where I love like the solution-focused work, is it takes some of the pressure off of me to be thinking of responses. That to me is a defensive response. When my defenses are active, I've tuned you out already, Sam, and I'm ready to respond with the reasons why you're wrong, rather than listening to understand why this is important to you. And that then takes a little bit of the personality, like the personhood, out of it, just enough to listen to the emotion behind it.
It's almost like you need to lower your expectations before receiving feedback that you know is going to have negativity in it, that it is not about you. It is not personal. And when you are dumping everything you have into the job and into the role, and you are not sleeping, and all the things you were talking about before, I just felt so hard. It is incredibly difficult to separate the two together. And it actually, in theory, turns people away from sharing the truth with you because they don't want to hurt you, but you're showing them that you're taking it personally. Right. Mm-hmm. And you want them to keep coming to you right. and coming in, but there's also a responsibility of the person giving the feedback to do it in a way that is kind and empathetic and has statements in front of it to say, this is not about you. Mm-hmm. You know?
I know what you mean. I mean, thoughts? I had to give some of that feedback pretty recently of like, you know, the client had this feedback, but it's general feedback. I know it seems like it's about you. It's not about you. It might not even be about them. It might be about external forces in their world that are impacting their feedback about us, but it's not about you. You're still going to think, oh my God, it's about me. And that's where that negativity comes in, and you have to get in front of mm-hmm. it of, okay, maybe it's really not about me, and changing mm-hmm. that mindset. So I don't know, Benjamin, maybe you have some tips of how to quiet like those inner demons of like, mm-hmm. it's me, I'm overthinking mm-hmm. it. I'm going to think about it for, you know, 6 days straight, but it's really not about me.
Because our work, and it sounds like y'all's work, is also very meaningful to you. And we've also been told to find jobs that bring us passion, that we're passionate about. And so these ideas get married together. Mm-hmm. And you think, to insult my work is to insult me because I've put these identities so closely together. And so, Sam, it's not easy. One of the ways that I think is helpful is to practice getting feedback, asking for it regularly. There is great research on why we don't like feedback. We don't like being told that we're doing things wrong. We start to think about who's saying it. So what meritocracy or like what merits does this person have to be speaking to me? And I go, oh, well, it's just you. It doesn't mean anything to me. Is it truthful? So we start to already like rationalize ways to avoid receiving feedback and pushing it out rather than seeing it as an opportunity to maybe take at least one piece and say, but maybe there is something there in that one piece. Maybe the feedback actually is about me. And maybe I dismiss 95% of it, but who's to say that that 5% is not worth looking at, saying maybe there is opportunity to do something different and I can do something differently with that 5%. Mm. The rest of the 95, that's a frustrated person. That's someone who's upset. I see that in therapy when we're working with couples and we try to pull blame out of the conversation and we go, stop, 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 stop. The first 5% was the good part that said, when you do this, I feel really dismissed and I don't feel valued as a partner. I go, oh, stay right there. Stay right there. That one 5%, that one behavior, which means nothing, perhaps, to this one person, they didn't think anything about it, means that you feel dismissed and left out. How does it feel to feel like a partner who feels dismissed and left out? What is it? And so I think in taking the feedback, it's not about separating identities. It's looking for, is there parts that I need to take with me? And what parts do I need to let go of?
It's hard to steer conversations that you start to see go down a negative route, especially when there's a lot of people in the room. Mm. It starts to lead to rambling.
Right. And sometimes you get involved because mm-hmm. you're like, I have an opinion on this, but really I should be steering them away from that conversation, not the ship into the storm.
Or maybe not even away. Mm-hmm. But yeah. really ask a clarifying question or pause the room and pull out the thing that was constructive, that didn't land hard enough, like you were saying, the 5%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like is that could be a tactic that leaders use when the room is just going. You know it. You can feel it. It's a freight train when negativity comes in and then negativity bias comes in and then there's support systems and then it turns into a vent session. But there is a role that leaders must play to validate the thought, to hear the thought, to make sure they feel comfort that they were heard and seen, that change will happen. But there is this slowing down that has to happen, that you've got to find the way to not let it happen too much, but also not stifle it.
Mm-hmm. We see this, I've personally experienced it in teaching diversity courses in particular. And what students will often say when they feel the most dismissed is when it's the faculty who's actually responding to their own anxiety and shutting down conversations that probably actually need to be happening. But the leader within the room was too maybe ill-equipped or didn't have the skills or wasn't ready or was too anxious, to allow some of that intense energy to just exist in the room. And I think I feel in business settings as well, our colleagues respond to that too. They know when this is actually something we need to discuss, and it's going to sound loud. It's going to sound intense. There's probably going to be maybe some hurt feelings. We're going to have to say ouch a few times where we've overstepped, but it's energy we need to probably let out and let into the room, because that's also how we grow from each other. And when a leader sees that and immediately stops it, we go, this is someone who can't handle hard conversations. And I felt that. And there are moments, I think sometimes it benefits to be a therapist at times in moments like this where I go, oh, they're just yelling. Like sometimes we just need to like let it out and get it out. Just go do it. Okay. Do we feel better? And can we move forward? Let's pick up the pieces again, because we have some hurt feelings. We have some intense feelings, and those feelings are fair. Let's talk about them, because this is a space where we need to talk about them, because to let them boil up, it's just that's the vibe. I think when we think about a negative workspace environment, it's when everyone's talking about the thing, but no one's talking about it. And it creates an atmosphere that tells us we're not allowed to, but we're going to with colleagues. But as soon as we get in front of that boardroom, everything's great, because we know leadership can't handle that space. Mm-hmm. What we really need is a place where we can actually challenge each other and say, here's some things that could be different. And let's disagree about it. Are we willing to be safe to disagree with each other and walk away saying, we don't have to agree? That's not what produces a good workplace environment. We're all going to walk away with different ideas. Great. Let's do that.
It goes back to what it feels like to be perceived as negative Nancy. Mm-hmm. When you are the one trying to proclaim what needs to be said, and when leadership doesn't listen or isn't willing to have that conversation, you start to get pegged subconsciously as this negative Nancy person, when in reality, you're crying out to have this thought validated or this thought discussed or this thought exist.
Rebel has created such a safe space where I feel like I can come to you or to Brynn or to Laura or those senior leadership people and say how I really feel about a situation. But when I say it time and time and time again, I'm like, oh man, I'm being such a negative Nancy. Like, I feel like I'm the only one bringing up issues to you guys. Like, you must think that I think everything is wrong, but I'm sure you don't feel that way. Mm-hmm. But when I see myself having that forum and being able to say those things to you, internally, it feels like I'm being a negative Nancy.
And I think that's when there's times when the leader needs to step up and see that you feel that way and say, here's how we can come to a solution together so that you don't have to keep feeling like you're bringing it up to us, because we're not acting.
No. And you're not acting that way. That's a personal problem for me. But
no, but it's good, because like, just to have this conversation alone, I feel so... I'm just like reflecting like crazy. I can't even formulate a thought, because I'm like, I'm geeking out on this topic myself, because there's just so much to learn.
There's so much.
There's so much to learn.
So much, but it's allowing that space to exist. And when we think about process change, I may miss it in the therapy room. You may bring up something to me and I miss it as a therapist. Like, I just... limits, it just flies past me. Yeah. I don't catch everything. But the way we believe process change and problems to exist is, it doesn't matter if I missed it the first time. I can probably guarantee you, give it a session, give it two sessions, I'm going to see that process show back up again until I address it and I do something about it. When we move careers, we think it's going to solve the problems, but we forget that if we're moving with the same mindset, the same intent, the same personhood, I can probably predict I might see the same situation show up again. And then I think, but what does it mean to be the person who has to be the ambassador of bad news?
Oof.
Sam, I'm just thinking about that. Like,
that's the title of this episode right there. The ambassador of bad news.
That would be hard. I would think that would be hard, you know, to feel like I'm the person that people trust to say these things to. And then I have like the kind of funky job to be like, by the way, Allison, like this still hasn't been addressed. You know, this is still going on, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I imagine that's hard. I imagine that's probably a hard role to feel like I get mm-hmm. the opportunity to introduce change.
Right.
But I also feel like I don't want you to think that it's just, you know.
Well, it's definitely like double-sided. Like on one side, it feels good that, you know, people trust me enough to tell me these things that they feel that I can bring them to leadership for them. Or on the other side, that I trust myself enough to say these things to senior leadership and not be fired for saying them or something like that. But then there's the other side where I'm like, oh, I got to bring something up again. Like I got to question everything mm-hmm. and to do it time and time and time again. Luckily, Rebel is a place where you can do that. There are other workplaces where you're not so lucky.
But there are mm-hmm. times when we receive it and react in a really poor way. Mm-hmm. Because we are taking things so personally.
Because you're dealing with the same issue yourself.
But that's not your fault.
And you probably have the same questions that I'm having. Mm-hmm. You're like, damn, like she's looking right into my soul.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it takes that work on yourself to separate like just the mindfulness of every conversation and mm-hmm. being present in that conversation, not present in all the past and all the other feedback, but like yeah. really in the conversation. To hear that person and separate the feeling, the personal connection to the job and your work and your worth. That's not what they're critiquing.
Yeah. And I know myself as a leader, I'm sure you feel the same way. I'm so protective over like the people that report to me and like, and so like, I want to protect them. So that when they bring me like this negativity or this anger or fear, all of those emotions that can become negativity, I feel like I want to fix their problems. But sometimes they just want you to listen.
Yeah.
And they just want to be negative at you. You don't need to do anything.
How many times have you experienced that with your friends too, your loved ones, where you're like, I'm not looking for you to fix this right now. I just need you to show up and hear me and see and validate that I'm like really frustrated right now. We try to dismiss hierarchies. We try to do this in therapy actively too, but we have a hierarchical system. In many workplace settings, even in the therapy setting, I have all the questions, you have all the answers, you know, and we have to remember that there's much more for those lower on the hierarchy to lose and much more voice to lose if it goes wrong. And perhaps it's remembering part of the strength it even takes to recognize that from the top and go, wow, they're willing to risk so much to even bring this statement to me, knowing they have so much more to lose than I do in many ways. And so what does that mean for me?
I'm going to shift gears on you.
Please.
And focus on your research around the LGBTQIA community, because I think it's connected to how you first brought up the sheer gender bias that exists in the feeling of being a negative Nancy mm-hmm. and how that social construct still exists and why it feels that way and how do people overcome that social norm or social bias to have the courage to have the negative, knowing that there are some things about you as a human you cannot control.
I think on the one hand, when I think about my research, it is important to recognize that like those with privilege must do their own educational background work first and foremost. When we think about things that may be happening, even in the hierarchy setting, if we're not talking about minority status, we need to know the lived experiences of people. It is not their job to teach us what it is like to be them. From a structural standpoint, because then what I want to know about is your uniqueness. Tell me your story. How is this impacting you? And you don't need to teach me about what it means to have this identity either. So when I think about my experience in my research is a gay student at the time and is a faculty as well, I think there's like this conflating exhaustion between recognizing that change can happen and is needed, because that's what I've experienced, that there is room, let's say, for more gender diverse restrooms, or the language you have adopted into your contracts could be better. It's exhausting at times to feel like it is my job to teach you or to teach others to see these things. At the same time, I'm willing to do it if I know it's going to make a difference for one other colleague, maybe 5 years down the road, that experiences your workplace environment. So I think there's a mutual exhaustion right now, and we're seeing this a lot in a lot of discord. We are in 2022, and there's a discord between how do you not already know this right now at this state in our being, and how can I also show up to the fact that you don't and be willing to meet you in that place and say, okay, let me also recognize your humanity and the propensity for you to change, because it'd be dumb of me to act as though you haven't been changing your entire life and are also capable of more change going forward. So how can I bring you into the conversation rather than calling you out of it? With this research, you know, it's important for us to recognize and look towards the change makers. What have they been listening for? What have they been asking for? As a white male, I have to look back at queer history and recognize this is a predominantly strong movement led by people of color, trans people of color, females, particularly trans females. You know, like there's a history here that I get to benefit from because I've chosen to look back at it. And I think that's also what we're afraid to do as leaders at times, is to look back and go, yeah, we did screw up. Let's talk about that time, because we need to address that first, because it left a wound. And I see this at times when we just adopt policies and think it's going to solve the problem. Let's hire 5 queer people to the office. That'll solve the diversity issue. It's not going to solve it, because you haven't changed your way of being. You haven't changed your office's way of being. And we know that. We recognize, oh, I'm the token showing up. But I'm here. We can work from this. And I think when I think of negative Nancys, it's not because they're negative. It's because they're calling you out on a system that's no longer working, and they're asking you to change it. And that's what makes them negative. It is not negative. Your system's broken because it only benefits really one particular type of person. And if we break that hierarchy even further, we're going to say it benefits cis white men in business. And so we get to look back and go, they're actually not negative. They're just calling us on our crap, which is a broken system meant to benefit very, very few people. And yet I'm asked to participate in it and be happy about it when I recognize I'm a loser in the game.
Oh, wow. There's so much in that.
Thank you.
Sorry. For that.
No, it's a great perspective.
That research-backed perspective
is
so valuable to learn from. In this world of negative Nancy, I don't know that it's that anybody actually explicitly says it out loud. Mm-hmm. It's this internal narrative that happens that I too once felt. And it was at this time of like complete tension, because I didn't have control. I wasn't in a leadership position. And therefore, I was the one bubbling things up and trying to have courage and all the things. And I remember feeling that way. And what would come out of me was perceived as being a bitch. And in reality, it was this like leader trying to emerge and have a better way of doing things. I was fighting the status quo where I was. And in my mind, I kept telling myself I was the negative one. When I was the negative one, I needed a change. And that change ended up being an amazing, led me to this. But I remember that conflict that was like, I'm not negative. I don't want to be this negative person, but I am not being heard. And the change isn't happening fast enough. And so there does come a time when you do need to advocate for yourself and say, no, we're capable of more, but here's a solution. So that it wasn't just sitting on the negative and festering in it, that there came a breaking point that was like, I am only going to change this for myself and be the advocate like you're describing. I can't expect everybody else to see that for me. Yes, they need to do their research. And yes, absolutely, they need to do their own homework and reflection and all that. But we too have to come to the table and decide how we're going to show up and decide what we're going to channel and funnel that negativity into real meaningful change and impact in a positive way. And then it literally births who you were meant to be.
To get that feedback and say, okay, thank you, and then not do anything is kind of pointless. You have to be open to making the changes from what you hear based on that feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a few points. And one, I'm going to start with change. As you mentioned, Sam, a great concept to remember is that change is constant and inevitable, and you can either actively be a part of it or be a passive participant, but things will always be changing.
Yeah.
That's just what we know. And I was getting a little bit emotional, even Allison, just like listening to your story. I mean, like, I just feel like I don't think she would mind me sharing, but just hearing your stories, I'm actively thinking about my sister who is constantly, I just get text messages at times, phone calls, just in tears of how frustrated she is with the people in the industry, marketing, business. It's hard. And for a woman in business, it is hard. And I just empathized with your story and in just getting images of the work my sister's gone through. And I am reflecting back to this topic that everyone's talking about, but and no one's really talking about, this quiet quitting. I looked at it into it before we got on here and I thought, what's happening? My naive brain at first was like, are people just like quitting quietly? Like, I mean, just like walking off of the job and not. It's so much more. It's speaking, Allison, perhaps to the agency that we're talking about that says, my industry is either going to change with me or I need to change myself. And what that looks like is what I'm willing to give work because it's taking more than I've allowed them or wanted them to have. So what does this change look like for me? There's privilege in that statement too. Some of us feel like we don't have the option to sign off at 6 o'clock and feel safe about having a job to return to at 8 a.m. And so how can we change with that? What does change look like in that place? And I think this quiet quitting is actually something that we as industry professionals need to be talking about. Why are we so exhausted that this concept is coming forward that says, I recognize you don't see my value. So I'm going to see my own value. And you're going to be frustrated with that. But the change that I talked about is not coming from you. Mm-hmm. And that's clear. You've made that very clear. So I'm going to make the change. You know, it would be one thing to dismiss it. I think it's another thing to look at it and say, what work dynamics have we created where people are truly miserable right now?
I'm going back to, Sam, something you said that really sits with me, because there's a certain expectation of the most senior leaders in any organization that you have a lot of it figured out and everybody needs to believe that you do. Right.
Right.
And there is a lot that you do, you know, you can see it clearly because of where you sit and how much you understand about the work, the workings of whatever business that it is you're leading. And then there are the places to be vulnerable on the things that almost every industry is grappling with. And I think this is the conversation that needs to happen with everybody, that it is human. It is authentic to be vulnerable and say, like, we don't know how to deal with that quiet quitting. What are ways we can come together to understand it, to pull it apart, to talk it through, to solve it so that we're proactively having the conversation, the dialogue like we are today, instead of reacting after they've already quietly quit? It's like, let's take control of that conversation. Let's be the ones to have it. And
just listening to people.
And listen.
Because we know it's there. A Gallup poll came out as soon as quiet quitting kind of really took off. I think it was TikTok that really, I find myself on TikTok. Yes, I do. I think it's important to know it's happening in all social platforms. But Gallup released a poll and said that about more than half of the U.S. workforce would define themselves in the quiet quitting category. Wow.
Well, I think it's also connected to everybody having this existential crisis. This is the post-COVID, like, what is this all for? What is the point? Why does it have to feel so negative? It doesn't. It's that we are all human and that we have made so much progress as humans and that we choose to dwell in the negative and we should talk about the negative and we should also celebrate progress and see optimism in everything.
And see the positives
that we do. And we can choose that too. And that's not toxic positivity. That's just, who do we want to be?
So I have a fun exercise I like to do, but there's also this term called reckless optimism. It was in an article from Julie Meyer, and it takes that toxic positivity and like reframes it and puts it as this reckless optimism that allows for negativity to exist long enough to feel it, to let it occupy that space and say, this is real. Please invite negativity to the conference table. It's here. So let's actively recognize their seat at the table. Give it the space and then move forward and say, and now what do we do? Let's not dismiss the human experience. Like, let's talk about COVID. We just jumped right over that grief experience. It just jumped right over it. And I think so much of us are still experiencing like a retroactive grief process. This hole inside
PTSD,
of us
where we were, honestly,
like we were asked to step away from community and this shared experience of being human together. And we're asked to still perform. And that hurts because I think that's what allowed us to see. I don't think you see me as human. You're missing my grief. I'm well aware of that. And I think we're all still grappling with that loss, not only the loss that COVID brought and the loss of life, but that loss of the grief process that we were not afforded to just mourn how difficult this has been.
So what's the exercise?
It is permission to complain. And we love that. We love, give me permission to complain. You are going to complain. I did this at a solution focus conference. And I loved it. You get 5 minutes to complain about whatever you want. Doesn't have to be work related. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, kids missed the bus for school and it threw off your entire, you just complain about it. And the other listener, their only job through this active listening is to find three strengths in that complaint, three strengths that you heard.
I love that.
And when you do this, you get so surprised because it offers a reframe. Wow. You must care about your kids so much. It is important for them to get an education that when they miss the bus, you know what that means. They can't just miss school. For them to be at school, it's important to you. You value that in your kids. It's important for you to be on time. You like when people see that you're on time, don't you? So I see that. And so you get to offer that complaint. And when we've done this exercise, people don't feel dismissed in their complaint, but rather empowered through why they feel frustrated. They get to have a connection to, there's a problem and there's a reason for it. It's because I also value these things. And this is why this dissonance is happening in me. It's not just because I'm a negative person. It's actually a response to that something could have been better or could be better, will be better. And we get to empower people through that strength.
I love that. We just actually did an exercise with the client services team for a training that was very similar. It was like a rant. So one member of the team ranted for 60 seconds. The other member of the team had to listen and pull out, what are they really ranting about? Like, it's not that your husband left the dishwasher unloaded for the 45th time. It's that he doesn't value you when you come home from work and what you asked for him to do wasn't done. Like, what are they actually saying? It was an active listening exercise. But I love the spin of like the three kind of strengths and positives out of it instead.
Because I think what this podcast has done for us is put language to how some of this stuff feels at work. And we all need that language. We all need to understand it, to talk it through, to share how we're struggling, listen to outside perspectives like yours that are so eloquently said, and just be human together. So cannot thank you enough for being on the podcast today. We could literally talk for hours.
I know.
You were absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank y'all. Thank y'all for also just choosing to see opportunity for growth, not only in your workplace, but how to inspire growth in others to tap into the hope that I think we're all feeling and needing and asking for, and listening to that and being willing to do that. I think that is awesome. And I appreciate you both so much.